This podcast is part of the Zedia Network. That's media with a Z. For more information on the Zedia Network, you can check them out on Twitter, at Zedia Network. Now to the show. Welcome to another exciting episode of the Browns Huddle Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Hand. You can find me on Twitter, at Browns Huddle. You can also find this podcast on Twitter, at Browns Huddle Pod. We have an exciting show for you today. We have a television producer from Hollywood, John D. Beck. He's also a passionate, faithful Browns fan. So we're going to get into some television talk, some Browns talk. It's going to be exciting. This podcast is part of the Zedia Network. That's media with a Z. Check out everything that they're doing on Twitter, at Zedia Network, or you can find them on the web, ZediaNetwork.com. They have a lot of great things going on. They're dropping new podcasts left and right. So definitely go check out what they're doing. They've got some great sports podcasts already out there like this one. And like I said, they've got a couple new podcasts that's rolling out right now as we speak. So check out Zedia Network. That's media with a Z. Also, I want to say this coming Wednesday, we have another guest. We're dropping two episodes this week. This coming Wednesday, I'm going to have Daniel Kelly on the show. He's the author of Whatever It Takes, and he is a former pro scout for the New York Jets. So you're not going to want to miss that episode. It's going to be fantastic. Daniel Kelly was a fan of the NFL, just like you and I, and he went from being a fan to being a scout in the NFL. So he's going to share his story with you. He also has a goal to get back in the NFL. So it's just very inspirational, and I'm excited to have Daniel Kelly on the show. Again, that's dropping this coming Wednesday. But for now, we have a guest, John D. Beck. He's a television producer in Los Angeles, California. He's a Browns, Cavs fan. He's produced shows such as Side Hustle, Fuller House, Night Squad, Disjointed, The Hughleys, According to Jim, that's one of my personal favorites, I love that show, Shake It Up, Pair of Kings, and he is the creator of Liv and Maddie. So we're going to hear from John Beck, and it's going to be an exciting sit down with him. So let's go ahead and crank it up. Let's do this. Welcome back. Next on the show, we have another beyond extraordinary guest. He is not only a television producer, but he's also a Browns fan, so I'm really excited to have him on the show. He has produced shows such as Side Hustle, Fuller House, Night Squad, Disjointed, Hughleys, According to Jim, one of my personal faves, I love that show, Shake It Up, Pair of Kings, and the creator of Liv and Maddie. From Hollywood to your ears in Cleveland, I'd like to welcome John D. Beck to the show. John, welcome to the Browns Huddle Podcast.
Go Browns! Thanks for having me, Jay. I'm thrilled to be here.
That's awesome. The listeners couldn't see, but he put on a Browns mask. I'm going to probably throw this on YouTube, so you can probably check it out there. But that was awesome. All right. Well, welcome to the show, man. This is going to be fun. I've been looking forward to this interview for a while now.
I'm thrilled to be here. This is going to be a lot of fun.
Absolutely. Well, speaking from somebody that's never been on your side of the entertainment industry, I have to just start by saying this is an absolute honor to have you on. it is rare that someone finds him or herself in the world that you live in. How did you get your start in television?
Well, I grew up in Northwestern Pennsylvania, which is how I became a Browns fan. After that, I graduated from high school and went to Syracuse University. 4 years after that, packed everything into my crappy little Ford Tempo and moved across the country and just started kind of hustling. I started out as a production assistant on a bunch of little productions, and finally found my very first job in television was on I was a production assistant on a show called Boy Meets World. So after 4 years of spending all kinds of dough at going to Syracuse University, I had the honor of getting lunch for Corey and Topanga. That, kind of bounced around as an assistant for years and finally ended up our first show. I work with a writing partner named Ron Hart, who I met at Syracuse. And Ron and I sold our first network freelance script to a show on the Hughleys, actually. And then we were staffed after that. So I can 100% tell you that I owe my career to D.L. Hughley, who's one of the best human beings I've ever met in my life and absolutely adore the man, who also has Cleveland roots. His family's from Cleveland.
Wow, that's awesome.
Yeah.
See, you had something in common right away.
Absolutely.
So that was fresh out of college. You packed up your car and moved to Los Angeles, I'm guessing?
Moved to Beverly, just like the Beverly Hillbillies, huh?
Well, I'm glad that you decided to be a Browns fan. You know, being born in Pennsylvania, you could have easily went to that side.
I got to tell you, I grew up in Erie, Pennsylvania, or outside of Erie, Pennsylvania, and you've got kind of the triangle of AFC playoff contenders at the time, because we had the Bills, we had the Steelers that were kind of on their downswing and before they kind of came back up, and then the Browns, and I just fell in love with the Bernie Kosar Cleveland Browns.
Oh, okay, so you started following the Browns in the 80s.
Yes, sir.
Like I did.
Yes.
Yeah, that was a fun team to watch. And
I don't think anybody now can quite understand just how fantastic it was to be a Browns fan for that little slice of life, to the point where it keeps us going 40 years later, 30 years later.
Oh, man, you're right. It does keep us going. And, you know, I feel sorry for some Browns fans are, you know, in their 20s and even 30s, and they have no idea. I mean, they obviously heard of Bernie Kosar and Ozzie Newsome and Webster Slaughter and
sure.
Eric Metcalf, all the great Browns in the 80s. But, you know, they've seen it on YouTube, I'm sure. But to be able to experience that at that time was something special.
A little hint of it 2 seasons ago. A little hint of it 2 seasons ago, that kind of magic that you can't quite explain, but that feeling that we can take on anybody at any time and win, even if we're not supposed to. But that was every year, every week. When we were growing up watching the Browns, and I feel like we're sneaking our way back in there.
We're close.
You gotta have those collective amnesia to be a Browns fan, but we're there. We're there.
You do.
Got the pieces.
That's right. Well, I want to get back into your career, and we'll talk some Browns. I don't want to get you any hot water, but are there any proud of, projects that you're most proud of?
I mean, obviously, I loved my 4 years at the Hughleys. That's kind of where I kind of made my bones and kind of got my start. So those years will always be very special to me. Creating Livin' Maddie and running that for 4 years was a real thing we're particularly proud of. And one of the things I'm most proud of is creating a show that earned Dove Cameron her Emmy Award for playing both Liv and Maddie. And I think we counted at one point, there were 12 different characters that she played at one point or another on the series. So, I mean, there's always something to be proud of on every series that you do. The thing I've found that I'm most proud of is, well, two things. Making something out of nothing. That's the cool thing about creating, as you well know, before you created this thing, there was nothing there, and you just kind of came up with an idea and figured out, you figure out what people do well and then have them do it. The other thing that I'm proud about is just teaching, especially the younger kids that I've worked with in children's television, teaching them how to do this and helping them figure out what is special about them and how they bring that to whatever role I've created, because it's a real partnership between your writers and your actors, especially in television, to create all these characters. So,
yeah. One common thread that I see in all the shows that you've been involved with is that they're wholesome. I mean, they're good shows for kids. They're good family shows. A lot of what we see on TV nowadays is not like that. So that's something that you have to be proud of as well.
Yeah, it's and you know, I've had some moments where I've had some moments on more adult-leaning shows, but for the most part, it's been either children's television or family television on the network side. That, I mean, I remember growing up sitting and watching TV with my family and things that you could all watch together. And that was a nice common bonding moment that you could have with everybody in your house. And it doesn't happen as much these days because everybody's running around. Although last 7 months, it's happened all the time, apparently. But yeah, it's been important for me and my writing partner to create things that everybody can watch together, whether it's a, you know, a 4-year-old kid or whether it's a, you know, 70-year-old grandparent. They can all kind of sit down and get something out of it and not feel and feel like some part of that show speaks to them.
Yeah. Even according to Jim, I remember watching that when it was out. I love that show. It was awesome.
That was fun. We did that for
Jim Belushi. Yeah.
192 episodes. It was the amount of different relationships that happened behind the scenes as well as in front of the camera on that show for 8 years is pretty incredible.
Yeah. I mean, it kind of takes me back to my, not childhood, but maybe my teenage years. I remember coming home on Friday nights, and that's what we did on Friday nights. We would,
yeah,
there was some sitcoms on. I'm trying to think.
TGIF shows.
Yeah. There you go. TGIF. Yeah. With Urkel and Full House.
Boy Meets World was a TGIF show when I was my first job as an assistant.
That's right. Yeah, that's what we did. Me and my brothers, on Friday night, we would sit around the 13-inch television and watch our favorite shows.
When I was a kid, we had three TVs stacked on top of each other. You had the one on the bottom that worked for UHF stations, and then the one in the middle that worked for VHF stations, but only the picture for both of those. And you had the top one that just tuned in the audio. So you kind of had to put them all together and then stick a matchbook into the dial to make it get to station like 12 and a half to make it work.
That's right. The old man, he didn't need a remote because we were the remote.
Oh, you were the remote and the VCR. Okay, so we had
and
to
get the rabbit ears, you know, get the reception guy.
Exactly. Kids have it too easy these days.
Oh, man. So, John, you had mentioned, you know, the last 7 months has been challenging. And as I count back in my head, it's been about 7 months. COVID, you know, has affected globally, not just the United States, but globally. It's affected everybody. I'm curious, how has that affected your world as far as being in the TV business and entertainment business?
Everything on the scripted side of things came to a screeching halt mid-March. The show I was most recently working on was a show for Nickelodeon called Side Hustle that I'm really excited for when it eventually comes out. We had our first table read the morning of Friday the 13th, in the middle of March, and it went fantastic. And then 2 hours later, we had to shut down. At the time, we thought it was going to be for about 2 weeks, and it's been 5, 6, 7 months at this point. How long has it been? I guess I could do the math, but
it's been about
3 years. So everything has just kind of been on pause. There's luckily for my particular profession, you can continue to write scripts when you're quarantined at home, but you just can't produce, with rare exceptions, you can't produce scripted shows without being able to have a bunch of people in one space at one time. And we're, I think we're getting to the point where that's, we're starting to figure out how to do that and how to do that safely now that some of the testing procedures have been a little more clarified and a little more available. But it's been tough, and it's been, you know, everybody wants to get back to work and get back to doing what we love doing, but it's also very important for us as producers to make sure that we're not rushing things back and we're doing things safely so that the people who trust us to make the right decisions for them are going to be safe. So as I, especially working on a children's show for Nickelodeon right now, my writing partner and producing partner always say that we're dads first and we're producers second. So we're going to make sure that everyone is taken care of as safely as possible, or we're not going to do it. You're starting to see some shows start to figure out how to come back a little bit. I know the Conners on ABC, I think today was their very first day of shooting again. It's a little easier for them right now because they're part of an independent studio, and the studios have to make agreements with all of the guilds and the unions to make sure that everybody is back safely for specifically for what they do. So we'll see. Keep an ear out over the next couple of weeks, the next couple of months, and hopefully we'll start to get them things back. But it takes a while for these things to turn around. So you're looking at another couple of months after that before things start making the air. So it's,
yeah,
your fall season is going to be a late fall, early winter season, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, as humans, we have an amazing ability to be able to look at a problem, find a solution, and move forward. And I think that's what we're doing globally. You know, I know in my business, I was stopped right around when you were in March, and they said it was going to be 4 weeks that we were going to be out. Well, 2.5 months later, we were still out. But, you know, you figure it out. You figure out a way to keep moving and keep the bills paid. And so, yeah, I was just curious, you know, how that was affecting you guys.
Yeah, we've been very fortunate that we've been able, I mean, usually on a sitcom, you have what's known as the writer's room, where you get anywhere from 7 to 10 really funny people sitting around a big giant table writing scripts and cracking each other up and punching up jokes. And then you'll go down to the stage and you'll watch the rehearsals and, okay, that joke still needs some work. That's not quite working. Let's go back and fix it. Obviously, we can't do that anymore. So what we've basically done is kind of what we're doing right now for the video portion of the podcast, where you've got every writer's room in town that's managed to still figure out a way to stay up and running is all doing it via Zoom. So instead of sitting in a room cracking each other up, you're looking at your laptop at the Brady Bunch grid of all the other people who you used to spend 12, 14 hours a day with, and trying to crack each other up on a second and a half delay, which, boy, is tough in comedy, because you pitch a joke and then there's that pause while the joke is flying through the internet to somebody else's things. You're like, oh man, did I bomb? Did I not bomb? Oh, okay, people laugh. Fantastic. You have to adjust a little bit, even on the things that you can control a little bit, which is writing and selling. You know, people are also out still pitching pilots to write. My writing partner and I were lucky enough to sell a pilot script to HBO Max in the meantime. So in addition to keeping the writing going on the show I'm working on, we have been able to fill up our time a little bit during a time off.
Well, that's awesome.
In addition to being a teacher.
There you go. I am curious. Has anybody taken a page out of the NBA with the bubble? That seems to have been that's working.
There
fantastic.
Have been a couple of places that have done that. I know Tyler Perry Studios down in Atlanta did that for a couple of shows. I have not. I think they just wrapped on an hour long they were doing. I don't know the show specifically that have done that, but there are places that have done that. It's I haven't heard that out in LA yet. It wouldn't be unheard of if you think about it. If you're shooting a movie on location, it's basically the same concept. It hasn't really happened yet because people haven't figured out how to do that here. I know that there are things that are starting up in, or have started up in Vancouver, that's similar to that. I know there's a big hotel that everybody who's shooting up Vancouver stays at. So it's bubble-ish, I suppose.
Yeah.
And then obviously Tyler Perry Studios used to be, I want to say it was an army barracks or something before it was a studio. So they do have facilities for people to spend the night and just kind of live there for a couple of weeks to finish up a season. That's a little easier to do on a show where your cast is primarily grownups. It's not particularly easy to do with a kid's show because there are only a certain number of hours that kids are allowed to work, which makes doing a kid's show, frankly, harder to produce than a grown-up show, because there are different laws and regulations that are in there to make sure kids stay kids and aren't being worked to death, which I'm all for. So.
Yeah. And like you said earlier, safety has to be number one when you're talking about, you know, 100%. Work over safety. It's going to be safety every time.
Well, especially in a business like ours, where, yes, 80, 85%, 90% of the people can sit back and have their mask on and take the precautions that we're told stops the spread of coronavirus, but actors can't do that. You know, they're vulnerable out there in front of the camera because you unless you're filming a scene about people who are in the middle of the coronavirus pandemic, which I don't know that too many shows are going to want to be handling that.
Probably be a couple movies with that.
Exactly. But, yeah, you know, actors are very vulnerable out there. And in order to do this, you have to be sure that you are protecting them because they're very unprotected. So you've got to create a situation that it is safe for them to work in, or else it's not fair to do.
Are you currently working on any projects that you can maybe give the Browns Huddle podcast an exclusive on?
Well, like I said, I'm really excited about this new show coming out for Nickelodeon called Side Hustle. It's starring two influencers who are really big in the influencer world. Jaden and Annie, I don't know if you know them, but if you don't, your kids do for sure. They are really fantastic girls who I cannot wait for everybody to see there. The show is basically Laverne and Shirley meets TaskRabbit. So it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, that's cool. Thank you for sharing.
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
HBO Hard Knocks. Are you a fan? Have you been watching it at all?
I will say this. I didn't watch season one and was all excited to watch season two. And then they did the Ravens season two. And I'm like, you know what? I'm not watching that Hard Knocks. And then didn't get into it until they finally picked the Browns. And I watched it. It was like, oh my gosh, how have I not been watching this every season? It's fantastic.
Oh, I mean, the Browns were the best season they've ever done. I mean, we're biased here, but
we're completely biased, but it was also fantastic because they like anybody they tried to follow, gone, gone, gone. It was heartbreaking.
I'm sure if you got HBO execs in a room and gave them some truth serum, they would probably wish they'd do it last year or this year, but
absolutely.
It was great.
They could do it every year.
Yeah, we didn't do bad after the Hard Knocks. So,
exactly.
So obviously HBO Hard Knocks is happening with the Rams and the Chargers. Have you seen any of the new stadium that they have going on? Have you seen any production? I don't know how close you live to that.
You know, I was at a long time ago, I was actually down at the Forum for an ELO concert and saw the stadium kind of half built. And it's going to be really cool, provided anybody can ever go to it. But it's going to be something else, man.
One thing I noticed, I watched the first couple episodes. The first one was all about COVID. I agree with that. You know, it should have been. But one thing I noticed is the COVID test. I don't know if you've ever gotten a COVID test, but I hear that they have to jam that swab way up in the nasal cavity. Well, on the show, they're just kind of barely getting it in there. So I don't know if they're going deep enough.
You know, they have started to have what they call the non-invasive tests, which are slowly but surely becoming available. I know the first time I got one, I might as well have jammed a nail up my nose. It was pretty far up there. The second time I took one, I put it nice and far back there like I did the first time. And the nurse who was standing outside my car was like, yeah, you don't have to go that far back. She thought I was going to bring half my brain out with it. But there's supposedly the less invasive is starting to get more and more accurate. So
so I guess they still get a good reading on the less invasive, which, hey, if that's the case, I'm a fan of, because I heard the other test you do not want to get.
The other test is it doesn't tickle. But
doesn't
still
tickle.
Worth it to know.
Well, let's get into some Browns talk.
All right, so
some headlines that we have going on right now. Training camp is in session. They're in full pads. I believe they just ended 3 days of full pads. And the Browns have had a couple injuries. You know, we all know Nick Chubb had a concussion day.
I didn't know he could get injured. I thought he was completely untouchable, man. But
yeah,
back in the building, though, is not completely cleared protocol yet.
Yeah, back in the building. It didn't – I don't know if you saw the hit. Mac Wilson, you know, I'm sure if he could take it back, he would. It didn't look that serious, but it was enough to give him a concussion. So sure. You can't mess around with that. Anything to do with the head, you know, above the mm-hmm. shoulders, you got to take that seriously. But it is positive. He's back in the building, so I don't see any issue there. Myles Garrett had a soft tissue hamstring injury. I think they just held him back just for precautionary reasons. And he was back today at practice.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah, he was back. And then speaking of Mac Wilson, this is probably the most serious injury.
This one hurts. Well,
yeah, this one hurts. The hyperextended knee. I know he's getting a second opinion, and by the time this podcast comes out, he probably will have gotten a second opinion. But even if he doesn't need surgery, he's going to be out at least 6 to 8 weeks.
Which is too bad. That's good. I love Mac Wilson. I loved what he did last year. He's the underdog, and I was really looking forward to a nice big season out of him this year and Sione Takitaki. So, and they're
that
already
stung.
So
yeah, that one stung a little bit. I don't know if you've been following him on Twitter, but you know, this whole entire off season, he's just such a positive guy, and you could tell he really took the off season seriously.
Yes, he did.
I think that he was coming out with a point to prove that the linebackers room is not as weak as everybody's saying it is, and it was just really unfortunate that he got injured. So we have a little work to do in the linebackers room today. Kevin Johnson, the former first-round pick of the Houston Texans that we picked up, got a lacerated liver.
So that's what I heard, man. Ow.
Dude.
I've never heard of that as a football injury.
I mean, my dad shattered his spleen playing football on Thanksgiving Day. I have heard of that injury, so I know, you know, that kind of stuff can happen. But a lacerated liver, that's we just keep him in our prayers.
How do you fix that, Kevin Johnson?
Huh?
How do you fix a lacerated liver?
I'm not really sure. Yeah, I mean, the body is an amazing machine. Let's just hope that you know, it helps them out with that. Other headlines today. I don't know if you saw it on Twitter, but OBJ caught, it was probably a 59-yard touchdown pass.
I saw that clip just before we came on, and it got me so hyped for this season.
Dude. I mean, how good is that guy?
Listen, we know last year the team underperformed as a team, as individuals, but the pieces are there. Nobody wanted Freddie Kitchens to succeed more than me. I loved everything about the idea of that guy. But it was fairly obvious for anyone who followed football that things just weren't right last year. And those things can all be fixed, and everything that we were hoping for last year can be exactly what we're hoping for this year with, you know, a little bit of a cautious optimism, if you will, instead of being completely all in as everybody was last year. This could be a really fantastic year for us, assuming the injury bug and frankly the COVID situation doesn't bite us. You know, that's going to be a thing that I don't know that people are talking enough about, is how well a team prepares for the possibility of something weird happening. And I think that we have not only the pieces there as starters, but we also have depth for the first time in forever that I can think of, you know, at just about every position. I mean, if anybody goes down, you've got a quality backup to take their spot, which is a big deal.
We haven't been able to say that in a long time. And that's part of what you get when you finally find the quarterback that you're looking for to lead your franchise. We found that in Baker Mayfield in 2018. And over the past 2 years, instead of focusing on finding a quarterback like we've been doing for the last 20 years, now we can start putting the pieces around him. So I think that's what we're seeing there. I mean, John Dorsey, I know he took a lot of criticism, but he definitely gave this roster overhaul and brought in some extreme talent.
I like Dorsey. I thought he made a lot of really smart decisions. Had a couple of decisions that weren't quite so smart, and you gotta pay for your poor decisions sometimes. There's consequences for your actions that don't work out. But I think the pieces are there. I mean, I'm unapologetic about loving the Browns every year, regardless if I know deep down we're going to be, 2-14. We're going to have a great year. This year feels different to me. It feels like everybody at least is on the same page, from ownership to front office to coaching to players. So with any luck, you're not going to have the pushing and pulling behind the scenes drama that we've had for the last couple of years, and people can just settle in and do what they're good at, which is coaching football and playing football. I'm a big believer as a TV producer in figuring out what somebody is good at and then having them do that, rather than trying to get somebody to teach somebody to do something that you want them to be good at. And I feel that's kind of what Stefanski is looking at this year. He's like, okay, let me find what people's strengths are and have them do those strengths. One of the other things that I pride myself on as a TV producer, especially for kids, is my job is to make you believe that you are capable of doing something that you're scared that you're not capable of doing. And I get that same vibe off Stefanski and his staff. So, I'm looking forward to this year with cautious optimism.
I am too. There's been a lot of talk, a lot of discussion about Kevin Stefanski or Alex Van Pelt calling the plays. Do you have an opinion either way?
Boy, that's a tough one. It hasn't worked out too well for us in the past where we have the head coach calling their own plays. You can go all the way back to the Bernie Kosar years with coaches wanting to call their own plays. That being said, one of the reasons Stefanski is in the spot that he's in is because of his play calling. And I don't know if there is a preseason, but we haven't had any preseason games. You don't really get to figure out how that will work with somebody else calling your play. So I don't know if it's a hindrance or a help for him to keep that, to be quite honest with you.
Yeah. I mean, being a head coach of a football team has a lot of responsibilities, and
absolutely.
I think he's smart enough to do either one. I mean, I think he would do a great job not calling the plays. I think he'd do a good job calling the plays, but I think he's smart enough to know his limitations, and I'm not as concerned about that. I think both of them would do a great job, and his fingerprint will be on the offense no matter what, if Alex Van Pelt are calling the plays or Kevin Stefanski.
Well, I think what you just said is very important, and it's the confidence to know your own limitations. I know when I went from being a writer on the writing staff to being moved up to being a showrunner and executive producer, you realize that the things that you did well that finally got you into the position where you're the boss and in charge are suddenly not the things that you get to do on a daily basis. You know, you're not necessarily sitting and focusing on the writing, you're off dealing with casting, or you're off dealing with approving wardrobe, or you're off talking to the set people trying to build a set, or you're off talking to the actors to help an issue on stage. So you do have to have a fantastic staff around you that you can trust to handle things that you used to handle and you used to be the rock star handling, and let them handle it. So I get the pickle that Stefanski's in, especially since the thing that you really enjoy doing is the thing that you always used to do anyway. So you just have to kind of find a way to to do both, but to trust that if you are not able to handle a certain job, that the people you've hired around you will handle it for you. And being confident and secure enough in your own abilities that you're okay handing that off to somebody else instead of keeping everything right here, which I feel like is maybe what kind of got the old coach. So hopefully Stefanski's smart enough to use his people and trust
them. I mean, when you're talking about writers, I'm sure a lot of it has to do with when you write something, you have the whole story in your head down to what a person's supposed to wear, what he's supposed to look like. And it's probably hard to give creative control up to somebody else. You have to have a lot of trust in that to be able to, that way the story is like you wrote it and you had it in your head to begin with.
Yeah, my whole theory is hire good people who know their job a hell of a lot better than you know their job, and then let them do their job. Have a plan. Never send anything down to the stage of the set that you don't have a plan for, and then hope to God that somebody comes up with a better plan. You could say, yes, let's do that instead of the thing that I came up with.
That's because right.
When you hand that off to some of the specialists, if you will, the of their department, they're going to have hopefully a better way of doing it. But the moment that you don't have a plan is the moment people are like, I don't know, what were you envisioning? Oh, I'm not sure. I thought maybe a wizard would show up and they would handle it. So having a plan and then being happy to jump off that plan if somebody comes up with a better plan is a big thing in TV, and I can only imagine it's the same way on a coaching staff.
I feel like what you just did was Freddie Kitchens. I don't, everybody says past 15 plays, he had no idea what was going to go on. But Kevin Stefanski, you know, I think he does have a plan. He's got the right people in place. I think he trusts his team that he has with him. So I'm encouraged. You know, it's easy to say before we take our first snap, but I'm encouraged from what I'm seeing so far.
Well, it's been nice this past week to finally get some idea of what's going on at camp, because we had no idea what defense they were going to run. We had no idea how they're going to decide stuff because nobody was there and nobody was seeing anything. So it's nice to finally get some video out of camp. Tough being in the dark.
I'm going to shift gears.
Any ideas?
Absolutely. I'm going to shift gears a little bit. Do you remember where you were when we landed OBJ? Do you remember what you were doing?
I was here at the house and I have a buddy of mine who works at the NFL Network. Heard about 2 minutes before anybody else did, and I just got a text in my kitchen. It said OBJ, and I was like, "Oh, what happened? Was there a?" That didn't give me any contact. So then I'm like, why is he sending me that? Oh my gosh, there's no way. No. And then it started to break, and it was, my kids went crazy because they were already fans. So I love him. I think he loves us. I think there's people out there who are just kind of looking to create controversy. And I don't know. I've never heard the guy say anything but positive things about being in Cleveland and playing where we're at, which frankly was tough to not say negative things last season. So I give him a lot of credit.
Hey, him and Landry, for as tough as the years we had, they both, you know, received for over 1,000 yards a piece. So, and you know, and they finished the year dinged up. I mean, OBJ played hurt all year with his groin. So I am excited about this year. They both seem to be healthy.
Jarvis is my guy. I love that guy.
Love that guy. True leader, yep. For sure.
The moment we got him, and all credit to Dorsey on that one. He said we need a winner in this locker room, and he went out and he got him for next to nothing. And he's been everything you could possibly ask from him on the field, off the field, you name it. That's a quality individual there.
Absolutely. What is it like being a Browns fan from far away? You're all the way on the West Coast. What is it like rooting for the orange and brown in Los Angeles?
Yeah, I'm a bleeding heart out here with the Browns. Everybody who knows me knows. Big Cleveland Browns fan, always have been. My kids are Cleveland Browns fans, and I tell them, like, you don't have to choose this. You can pick any team you want. It's like, oh, Dad, we're Browns fans. So it's tough on the West Coast. I mean, games start at 10 in the morning, which is weird. I used to go out and kind of find a Browns backers club or find a sports bar that would play them. But now that I'm got a couple of kids that are at the age where they want to watch with me, we get the ticket and kind of watch here at home, which is fun. You know, it's a lot easier to be an out of town fan now than it used to be, because you can get the games, you can go on to cleveland.com and read all the articles like everybody else. I mean, the other traditional things are tough to find, but you know, I went out and found all the old 80s Brown songs that we used to listen to, like Bernie and you know, all the Cardiac Kid songs and the 12 Days of Cleveland Browns Christmas, and have those all on the iPad. So every game day, my boys and I listen to all those songs. And it's, you know, it's not like being in Cleveland on game day, but you can make it work for you.
I remember you reminded me just now, I used to put on the Drew Carey Cleveland Rock song.
Oh, yeah,
we got touchdown that was scored. Sure. I'd crank up the radio and had it queued up. That's good stuff. So you're from near Erie, Pennsylvania.
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Did you ever go to any Browns games when you were younger?
Not as a kid. No, the first Browns game I ever went to was Cleveland Browns Stadium versus the Panthers in a frigidly cold game in December. I don't remember if Jake Delhomme or Jeff Garcia was the quarterback in that particular game, but it was freezing. Julius Peppers ate us alive.
So you went to the new stadium?
Yes. I was at the old stadium for a ton of Indians games, but never a Browns game.
The new stadium is fantastic. I made a decision last year, John, that I'm going to go to one Browns game a year in Cleveland. Last year was the first year, Sunday Night Football against the Rams. I met a lot of Browns fans and did the tailgating experience. And I have tickets for this year, week 3 against the Washington football team. I don't think that's going to happen, but a buddy of mine, we're going to fly to Cleveland anyways, because we already have the plane tickets and hotel, and we're just going to enjoy downtown Cleveland and find a little hole to watch the game. So
head down to the Winking Lizard.
I was going to ask you if you know any good restaurants or wing stops in Cleveland.
I don't know if I would know. We used to go to the Winking Lizard. We used to go to the Boneyard. I'm honestly not sure if I know any of the places that are there anymore. But anytime I'm in town, I try to get some Great Lakes Christmas ale if I'm in December.
Well, if you ever go back, the last time I went to Mabel's Barbecue, that was fantastic. Right in downtown Cleveland.
That sounds great. I wish I could have gone when they had the victory fridges going, man. My kids were enraptured with the victory fridge. Like, Dad, can we get one? I'm like, oh, I wish we could get one. And then
Baker's coming out party. He unlocked the fridges for us.
My kid was in my youngest was in first grade. And I knew I'd either done something really right as a parent or really awful as a parent, because the next day he did his writing report on the Bud Light victory fridges for the Cleveland Browns. Teaching, like, we love this. What is a victory fridge? Why did your first grader know about it?
Oh man, that was awesome. Yeah. Well, so getting into this year, you know, we have a lot to be excited about on the offensive side of the ball, and I think the defense can surprise us. But, you know, as it relates to the offensive side of the ball, we have awesome receiving duo. We already mentioned Landry and OBJ. But our tight end room is looking good. We just drafted Harrison Bryant. Good. We have Austin Hooper that we picked up. David Njoku, you know, we have him for another year, and we'll see on that. But then you look at our running backs with Nick Chubb and Kareem Hunt. It almost brings you back to the Beiner and Mack days. You know,
my boy EB, Eric Beiner, Ernest Beiner.
Yeah, who knows? I mean, maybe they can do a repeat with 1,000 yards apiece. But what are you most excited about and looking forward to on the offensive side of the ball?
I'll tell you what, and this is going to be a boring thing to talk about, but the thing I'm most excited about is having an offensive line that can protect the quarterback. Going into this, I mean, last season, both tackles were a bit of a disaster. Though I will say, don't sleep on Coleman switching over to the right guard spot. We'll see if he can.
You think he'll get that spot?
I'm saying don't sleep on him. Don't be shocked.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked.
I loved Conklin coming in. Excited about our new left tackle, Jedrick. Right guard is still an issue, but it's a lot easier to hide a right guard when you've got a right tackle that's doing their job and keeping that pocket from collapsing. Because I think we would have had a wildly different season last year, even with the coaching issues, if that line was able to give Baker a couple of seconds to breathe back there. So yeah, that's a boring thing to pick, but that's where I've been looking this year.
It's an important thing. I mean, you got to win in the trenches. I mean, everybody always talks about that. And last year we saw what happens when you don't win in the trenches. So yes. I was really excited that this regime they had to focus on the offensive line, right? But they did it in a good way. They bring, like you'd mentioned, Jack Conklin from Tennessee. They draft Jedrick Wills. I don't know if you saw a draft night. I'm pretty sure you did, but Joe Thomas was very excited about that pick. Joe
Thomas is over the moon for this guy. And if Joe likes him, I am on board, man. You don't get a higher house for where I'm sitting than Joe Thomas.
Yeah, I mean, how can you get a better stamp of approval than that? And Joe Thomas, he's telling people in interviews that he's actually given Jedrick Wills advice, and Jedrick Wills would be a fool not to take it. But, and I'm sure he is taking the advice. But, yeah, I mean, it's probably going to be a transition, you know, because obviously he was right tackle with Alabama. He's switching over to left tackle, so there's going to be a little transition there. But
games.
Yeah, I mean, Joe Thomas, he said he's not worried about it, so I'm not either.
Yeah.
Okay, what about the defensive side of the ball? What are you most excited about? Obviously, we signed Myles Garrett to the mega deal. He's going to be here for 7 years because he signed a 5-year extension. That's going to carry him into his early 30s. I believe it's 31 years old, but he got a $125 million there. So our defensive line is looking pretty solid. Our linebacker room, we'll see. Our secondary, you know, I'm excited about Greedy Williams and Denzel Ward. But what are you excited about on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, I am thrilled to get Myles Garrett back on the field. That's where he needs to be, and I think he's going to have a monster year. I was actually really excited about Kevin Johnson. Hopefully the lacerated liver doesn't keep him out too long. I have no idea what kind of rehab that takes or how long that takes, but and I was really looking forward to Mac Wilson. We'll see what else happens on the with the linebacker core. I mean, Taki didn't play a ton last year, but when he did, he looked like he was going to be a pretty decent linebacker. Grant Delpit is going to be fantastic, I think. But again, we got a lot of younger guys back there. Hopefully everybody gels. Again, no preseason games to kind of get your feet wet when you're first starting is a big deal and something that you kind of have to build into your system once you start the season, because there are, you know, how many times do you hear that even fantastic people coming right out of college are just stunned by the speed that this game is played at once you get up into the pros, and you can't know that until you know that.
I 100% agree with you. So week one is less than 3 weeks away, and I can't even believe that I'm saying that. Hopefully we play all 16 games this year. I'm pretty confident that we will figure that out. But as it relates to our season, our season starts week one against the Ravens. How do we get the W in Baltimore? I mean, that's a tough ask, but, man, I would love to get that W.
We got it last year. Why not get it this year? Hand that ball to Nick Chubb and let him run. That's how we get it. Protect the quarterback. Find your smart throws. I mean, we've got – all you have – I mean, with all the trouble that we had last year on that team – we still looked like the best team in football in that game in Baltimore. Most of those people are back. And if they're not back, we've improved on the position. There's zero reason that we can't. There's zero reason why we couldn't win that game. So why not win it? Somebody's got to.
I talked about this on a couple episodes ago, but I think there's a parallel between the Cleveland Browns this year and the Tennessee Titans last year. You know, last year before week one, everybody was writing off the Tennessee Titans. They're not going to win this game. They don't have a chance, including myself. I didn't think they had a chance, but man, they came out week one and just punched really right took us out. Behind the woodshed, you know, on that one. It was pretty embarrassing, very disappointing. And it was a foreshadow of how our season was going to go. I think there's a parallel that this year's Cleveland Browns can be last year's Tennessee Titans. There's a lot of similarities there. Nobody's expecting us to go into Baltimore and win that game. You know, but I think we can go in there and do it. And quite honestly, if we do, man, who knows what we, if we win week one against Baltimore, who knows what we can do this year? I'm thinking, you know, 10-6 is very likely at that point.
I have stopped predicting records because I'm always dead wrong, but why not? Why not? Well, why not come to Baltimore and win? They've got the firepower to do it. Go in and hit them hard.
It would be an excellent way to go back into Cleveland for that Thursday night game against the Bengals, you know, with a W there. But even if we don't get the win, it's going to be nice going back into Cleveland for that Thursday night game against the Bengals.
Exactly.
Well, this is kind of a fun question. When the Browns win a Super Bowl, we need to make a movie about that. Any chance that we can get you to produce that movie?
From your lips to God's ears, I'm in, man.
I'm in. Who would you have playing Baker Mayfield?
I think Baker plays himself.
Just have him play the. Yeah, why not? We can film in the off season, right? We've seen him on the Progressive commercials. He can act.
Exactly.
I saw Draft Day probably about 50 times, and I was so excited when that movie came out. But man, you know, if the Browns won a Super Bowl, that is what movies are made out of.
Absolutely, absolutely. I mean, frankly, the game 2 years ago against the Jets, Baker's coming out party, that felt like a movie to me, man. Just the script that you could not, if you wrote that script, it's like, oh, come on, that's not how it would happen. And it happened. And it happened for us this time instead of against us, which is how it usually happens when you have that great story. So we're still there. Baker still got that magic. I thought he was, you could tell halfway through last season that he knew that things weren't right with the team. And I give him a lot of credit for not calling people out and for sticking with what he had there while trying to do his best he could with what in hindsight you could tell was minimal coaching. I'm really looking forward to him this year, and I think he's taken it on the chin enough last year that he's not gonna let that happen again.
Hasn't he kind of played his whole career like that, where everybody's doubting him, everything's against him, and he comes out with a chip on his shoulder and proves everybody wrong? Well, I believe that this year he does have a chip on his shoulder and he does have something to prove. So I do believe that this year he's going to come out slinging.
Mm-hmm.
And the nice thing is, you had mentioned Nick Chubb earlier. The nice thing is we don't need him to be Drew Brees or Peyton Manning or John Elway. You know, we don't need him to
ball off.
And the ball off, you know, be a point guard in NBA terms. Distribute that ball, get it in the playmaker's hands, and, you know, use those tight ends. I can't tell you how huge that's going to be, because if they're stopping the run, we got the tight ends right there. If OBJ or Landry's not open, we got the tight ends to bail them out. The Austin Hooper signing was huge. I'm really excited about him, and I guess they must have gotten together in Austin, Texas over the off season and did some workouts together. So you could tell they're all in on each other. And Hooper said Baker's one of the main reasons why he came here. He's excited about him. So, yeah, I agree with you, man. This is
– I love him.
Baker's year.
I love him being as cocky as he is, and I love that over this past several months you haven't seen him kind of getting into it with people on Twitter or for the most part on Instagram. He's just kind of had his nose to the grindstone, and I can't wait to see him be cocky on the field instead of off camera, you know?
Absolutely. Well, you'd said you don't give predictions, and I'm with you, but what are your predictions for this year? Do you have a prediction?
I think it's going to be an exciting year. And I know there were many points last year where I was just kind of disappointed and just kind of felt bummed out. I don't think you'll have that feeling this year. I think wins are going to be great. I think they're going to be a well-disciplined, well-planned out team. And that's all you can ask for, especially with this weird offseason that we've had where you don't get to have the kind of training camp you usually have. I mean, the coaching staff's at a massive disadvantage because they are a new staff that hasn't really gotten a chance to work the guys out in the way that you want to work them out. But I think this is going to be a team that everybody can be excited for and be proud of, which wasn't always the case last season.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things I'm just excited about is to have football again. You know, this has been such a weird year. A lot of disappointments, and people are struggling out there, and nothing's normal. So to have football back, I can't tell you how excited I am to have the Browns kick off against the Baltimore Ravens on September the 13th and just get some normalcy back in our life, you know?
It will be nice. It's everybody's been through a lot these past couple of months. It'll be nice to kind of sit and enjoy something that, I mean, the first week baseball was back, it was the greatest thing ever because it's just something that felt regular, you know?
Yeah.
Football's going to be that and more.
It's been fun. The NBA's been fun. The MLB's been fun. I'm not too much into hockey, but I hear that's going well right now. So,
yep.
I'm excited for this year. Well, John, it was such a great time that you spent with us today, and I appreciate you coming on the show. I'd like to give our guests opportunity to plug themselves. How can we find you on social media?
You can catch me on Twitter at John D. Beck, JohnDBeck. Instagram, it's at John D. Beck. Come find me if you want to hear a lot about old Brown stuff and current TV stuff. Oh, you know what? I want to give one plug out there for my favorite story of camp right now. A lineman I'm hoping makes the team. I'm talking about Frank the Tank Courtney. I don't know if you're familiar with him or not, but he's got his one shot, and he's working his butt off, and I'm hoping he makes it.
Absolutely. I actually just heard from him yesterday. He gave me a phone call. I shot him a text out yesterday just to give him some words of encouragement, and he was in the middle of training, and he said when his phone started buzzing, he jumped at it. You know, he was training, but he jumped at his phone thinking that maybe it was a call from one of the 32 teams, and he saw that it was me and took a little time out of his day to give me a call just to, you know, thank me for reaching out. But, yeah, he's such an inspirational story and loved by nice Brown's guy. Twitter. And he's got a lot of people pulling for him. So we
exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. You got to get behind a guy like that that's just putting it all on the line. And he ain't promised nothing, but he's just looking for one shot, one chance.
Exactly. And not for nothing, Eric Metcalf says he's down to his playing weight. You need somebody to return some kicks and some punts. He's ready.
I think a lot of people would love to see that, including myself. He was one of my favorites when I was a kid, him and Bernie Kosar.
100% agree. We actually he came out for the Browns San Diego game out, or Chargers game, not San Diego game, the Browns Chargers game out here in Los Angeles 2 years ago. And big long story, but he ended up hanging out with us while we were tailgating and eating my wife's buffalo chicken dip, playing a little football with my kids. And the funniest thing was watching people walk up and like, I think I know who that is, and then introducing themselves. And he got to kind of play like famous enough that people knew who he was, but wasn't right in the middle of the pack and everybody kind of jumping onto him. So we had a nice afternoon tailgating. Super good guy.
That wasn't the famous Christmas Eve game, was it?
No, this was we got beat up 2 years ago. Might have been 3 years ago.
Okay.
No, but not the Christmas.
I know it was against the Chargers that we got that win on Christmas Eve.
I know.
Put us at 1-15.
What a glorious.
Well, John, this has been fun. I would love to have you back on to maybe talk about a game recap as the season gets in, if you're open to it.
I would love to. You let me know.
Absolutely. Well, thanks for coming on the show, and we will definitely catch you next time. And again, thanks to all the listeners that listened to this episode. You are listening to the Browns Huddle Podcast. I'm Jason Hand. You can find me on Twitter at Browns Huddle Pod or my regular account at Browns Huddle. So we will see you next week.